Mary.
On our live one, we actually last night on arrival we were welcomed by Eddie Ray. And this morning you are welcomed by me. And I know all of us on arrival here, we were welcomed by the Cape Doctor. So we take this opportunity to welcome honorable members from our different political parties that make up our democracy. And we welcome those who represent the Department of Arts and Culture. We look forward to attending to your presentation. And we welcome our friends who come from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. They have become part and parcel of our institution and this committee. So we appreciate your presence. I look forward to having a fruitful discussion on all the issues presented and raised. With these many words, feel at home. The agenda item number 4 shall not be presented today. The minister wants to be personally present, which we appreciate, but unfortunately she is in cabinet as we sit here, and she does not determine when cabinet will sit. It's determined elsewhere. So we accept that apology, and also the offer and the willingness on the part of the minister to be present on this very important matter. I will suggest that we get that as soon as possible, preferably next week, because FIFA is here, Bafana Bafana, back, not only from Brazil, but also from Germany, and they are at their home camp in our country. So the sooner we handle this matter, the better. Otherwise, all other issues on the agenda are still in place. Apologies, please, item 2. And I need to emphasize that apologies must be written, except in emergencies, really. It's important to follow that procedure and submit written apologies. Any apologies, Secretary? None. Honorable?
Chair, I, in the culture of Limpopo this time of the year and lots of water, I've got tick bite fever, so I'm not sure that I will sit the whole meeting. If I don't feel well, please excuse me. I'm from hospital now, as I'm here. Tick bite.
Tick bite.
Those of us who engage in prayer are praying hard that you should last the meeting. And laying on of hands goes across party political lines. And that's one skill I have. Thank you. Any other apology? None. we shall invite the department to present on item 3.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members, for inviting us to do the presentation on our legislative program. And it's a program that we have been quite anxious to come and table to you. And we hope that today we will make some progress on this matter. Last year we caught up with a political calendar and could not fulfill our legislative program. Chairperson, I brought my colleagues, and starting on my left, not in a political sense, is Dr. Sukumani, and she is with our language division. And then I've got Mr. Singh, who is the colleague who's going to be doing the presentation today. And he's...
I did raise their hands when you mentioned that.
Dr. Sukumani. And Mr. Singh, who has been working on the legislative program. I must also apologize that I do not have my glasses. So it's very difficult for me to do a presentation over there and here. But Mr. Singh has been working on this presentation. And whatever he's going to be saying, we are agreed on it. And not unless there's a situation where I'll have to explain himself to you. But other than that, the presentation, I take ownership of it.
That's behind me. Where's the gadget for the chairperson? We always have that gadget here so that I don't have to turn around and look at the board. If that is not prepared, I just want the secretary and your good self not. You have a chance to be chairperson. So that next time it must be here, I can look at it. We must work on that. The venue is not God, it can be transformed. I'll turn around and turn my chair and look
better. Mm, all right. But I also do hope, Chairperson, that you have got the presentation in front of you.
I do.
Okay, thank you. And on my right is our new COO, Ms. Baduza. And
what is COO?
Chief Operations Officer.
Okay.
She's the Deputy Director General.
CEO.
No, I'm the CEO. And and then we have you know, my memory, Dr. Jokuin, and who is acting DDG, and he's also with the language services. And then there I've got Mr. Makubele Mbazima Makubele, he's also the Lion of the North, and in heritage. And then I've got Mr. Ndima, who's a Temba Ndima, and who is acting DDG for heritage promotion. I must just add that we have started with some interviews, and probably by July this year we will have all the DDGs in place, and there won't be people who are acting, who are not getting any Tony Awards and so forth. And this is a matter that is receiving serious attention. Equally important is the fact that members of the portfolio committee had emphasized that I seem to like a boys choir, mm-hmm. and that we need to address. Yes, yes, and that matter is still on the table, honourable members. It is receiving attention, and So they won't only be just a boys' choir, and I think that the presence of Miss Baduza is also a clear indication of our commitment to both excellence and gender equity in that department.
I have the honor
to share seat on line D with Ms. Zeliswa Baduza, and she had chicken while I had beef yesterday.
Oh,
proceed.
Okay. Courtesy of the African Selectin. On that note, Chairperson, may I please hand over to my colleague to take us through the presentation, and then we will take comments and questions afterwards. I'm sorry, Chairperson. One of my colleagues, Pio Machoba, is sitting here. He's in the minister's office, the parliamentary officer in the minister's office. I just feel like you, Chairperson, when I do not see people in front of me, then they get forgotten.
I thought it was your bodyguard.
He's got the physique. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members of the committee, DG, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Anil Singh. I'm the legal advisor to the department, and the presentation this morning is on the DAC legislative program. Now, the document pack
was... Are you legal advisor within the department?
Within the department.
Not outsourced?
Yes, sir. No, I'm the director for legal services.
Thank you,
Chairperson. The presentation that you have before you, copies were circulated, and then we've also made a bundle of documents which has got the details. In other words, the actual bills, the letters to the leader of government business, the letters to the speaker whereby the minister approved the program and submitted it. So I'm told those documents are on their way. They were couriered yesterday. So when we look at this presentation, it's taking an overview of what we have on the program currently. And the presentation itself will talk in broad terms and focus specifically on the main objectives of the legislation. When we are to engage on the actual content of it, we can engage on the details of that. So I would respectfully request that I be allowed to go through the entire presentation, and we will have sufficient time to engage actually on the substantive content of the bills that we have with your data. Now, as you know, the department embarked on a milestone achievement, which is the DAC legislative review program and the DAC overall policy review. These two processes lasted considerable years, culminated in a document, two documents in fact. The one was the Heritage Legislative Review document, and the other was the overall policy review document. Out of those review processes, which were quite extensive, which involved a wide range of stakeholders, emanated a group of recommendations. The recommendations find themselves into our legislation at this stage. So, as you know, because of the World Cup year, we were put under some pressure by the leader of government business to constrain and limit the legislative program to that which is absolutely necessary and which is the main priority of the department. And we did so by curtailing the program from quite a substantive program to four pieces of legislation. And on the program that we have currently is the Cultural Laws Third Amendment Bill, the Community Library Bill, the South African Language Practitioners Council Bill, and the South African Languages Bill. So I will talk in turn to each of these four bills, and then we can deal with the details. Now, as you know, the department has many pieces of enabling legislation that enable the institution, that created the institutions, and the DAC, more than 75% of the budget of the DAC goes towards funding of these institutions. And hence we have to have the enabling legislation. One of the recommendations that came out of the policy review and the DAC heritage legislative review was to streamline these institutions for maximum efficiency. So the Cultural Laws Third Amendment Bill is what we have as the first item. Now this is a general laws amendment bill. We had the option to take each individual piece of legislation and substantively revise it. That would have been a long-term and a process. The short to medium-term process was to take what we have, find out what the shortcomings were, and fix that. So the Cultural Laws Third Amendment Bill is a fix-up bill and a clean-up bill, which is intended to align our existing legislation with, amongst others, the Constitution, constitutionally mandated legislation, and the PFMA. Most of the legislation in the department predates the Public Finance Management. So one of the major achievements of this bill was to bring about that cleanup exercise. So the General Laws Amendment Bill, and we have two bills, Section 75 bill for those acts that are not impacting on the provinces, and we'll get to that, and a Section 76 bill for those ones that do impact on the provinces. DG presented the policy review and the legislative the bills previously to the previous committees, and it's an ongoing work that we had done. The bill was approved by the previous minister, Dr. Jordan, and presented to cabinet in May of 2008, and certified by the state law advisor in August of 2008. When Minister Dingwana came on board, she was of the view that we needed to have a greater and wider consultation, as a lot of the stakeholders had engaged her to say that they had to be engaged on certain aspects. And we did embark on that wider consultation. So we put the bill on hold, and we embarked on that wider consultation. I'm pleased to announce that in March of this year, we finished the last round of consultation. So the bill that we are taking is inclusive of the consultation, the comments, the criticisms, etc., made by the various stakeholders. In slide three. So in the Cultural Laws Third Amendment Bill, as I said, it's a Section 75 bill. The legislation being amended there is the National Film and Video Foundation Act. As you know, the National Film and Video Foundation is the primary funding organization of the department insofar as film, video, and digital media is concerned. And we're looking at the South African Library for the Blind Act. This is the act that enables the institution, the South African Library for the Blind, and creates its council. Then we have the National Library of South Africa Act, which is the act that also creates the National Library and its council, and then the National Council for Library and Information Services. This one is an advisory council to the minister. The other three are statutory councils. They are declared as Schedule 3A public entities, and they have a board and a CEO, and they function as executive councils of the department. Whilst the last one, the National Council for Library and Information Services, is actually an advisory council to the minister. Then the 75 bill, for those of you that are familiar with the PFMA talked about the CEO of the institutions being the accounting officer, the current legislation. But the PFMA has changed that. The PFMA talks about the council, the board, being the accounting authority of the institution. So these were all the amendments that we did. So the first principal amendment is to amend and rectify the situation to align it with the PFMA, all our legislation that says that the council, appointed by the Minister of Arts and Culture, is the accounting authority of the institution. The CEO is not the accounting officer. Then we found, with the years of experience in arts and culture, that a three-year term for these statutory councils was not adequate and not sufficient. Just when members were beginning to get to grips with their term of office, they found that they weren't coming to them. So we decided to extend the term to 4 years. And that is as a result of the consultation and recommendations that were made. Then, rationalization of the size of the councils. Now, some of our institutions, the council is large and unwieldy. If you take, for example, the National Heritage Council, it has something like 30 members, which is the provincial representatives and the rest of the members that are appointed. So this proved to be an expensive exercise. When council meetings are convened, travel, hotel accommodation, etc. So the idea behind this amendment is to make the council smaller, not more than 15 members. And this was accepted as a recommendation and put in the legislation. Then we are moving towards the issue of the performance management, and in the legislation we are proposing that the chairperson of each institution will sign a performance agreement with the minister. And this performance agreement will be aligned to the strategic objectives of the council. The rationale behind the performance agreement was supported by the National Treasury, which indicated that this is in line with best practice, that the minister has to hold the members of the council accountable for the delivery during their term of office. So it was widely agreed. The mechanics of the performance agreement are being worked out currently, and when the bill becomes law, they will be workshopped with the councils so that it doesn't get seen that the department is imposing this agreement on the council. In the word performance agreement, we emphasize the performance, but also agreement. It's a document which we sign in consultation, and the minister and the council must agree on what they will deliver at the end of their four-year term. Then we provided a performance management tool, the Code of Conduct for council members, which deals with conflict of interest, declarations, etc., business interests, etc. And this code of, a lot of our institutions do have the Code of Conduct, but it was never provided explicitly in the legislation. And now we are closing that gap and providing for the Code of Conduct, which must be signed within 3 months of the council assuming office, like the performance agreement must be signed within 3 months of the assumption of office. We also provide for the performance agreement and code of conduct for the CEOs of the institution, which the CEOs are employed by the institutions, and they, in consultation with the minister, and they are required to sign this performance agreement so that they can be held accountable for the performance and the fiduciary responsibilities that is incumbent upon them. Then we are trying to standardize the remuneration and reimbursement for reasonable expenses of council members. Now, as you know, the Treasury provides that when people serve on these statutory councils, they get remuneration. The old position was to be paid on honoraria allowances plus reasonable expenses for your travel, subsistence, etc. So the amendment we discussed with the Treasury, and the Treasury came back with the term to say that we should talk about the concept of remuneration rather than allowances or honoraria, because those are old terminology, and the concept of remuneration encompasses a higher rate of remuneration for the time that the members serve on the council. Of course, the members serve as a public good, and we cannot hope to remunerate them at the same rate that some people would be getting remunerated for serving on private boards, like PHP Bulletin and those kind of boards. But these boards where people serve, and they have to serve as a public good. But we need to reward them for the time that they take to come and do this job away from their businesses and practices, etc. So these are the general amendments. Then, just to touch on a few specific amendments in the 76 bill, the Legal Deposit Act, the department has a legal deposit committee that is there to advise the minister on documents that have to be, it's concerning our documentary heritage, where all documents have to be deposited at the place of legal deposit by the author. and then because of the changes to the certain of the places of legal deposit, we are now amending that. For example, Pietermaritzburg is called Imsenduzi. So Pietermaritzburg place of legal deposit is now the Imsenduzi place of legal deposit, etc. And then, as I said, the Legal Deposit Committee, Chairperson and members, is an advisory body to the department, to the minister, and then we need to provide for greater administrative and secretarial functions of the committee. The secretariat of this committee is within the department, so the department officials assist this advisory committee in the execution of its tasks. So we need to provide for greater secretarial support and administrative support so that the work of the committees can be done. Then the Geographical Names Council. This Geographical Names Council is a council that is also an advisory committee to the minister, and the council is consisting of nine provincial members and then the rest appointed by the minister, 15 members. Now, one of the great challenges over the years in arts and culture has been the fact that when the minister calls for nominations from the provinces or from the MEC to nominate a suitable member to serve on the council, such name is not forthcoming. For months, and repeated letters go by, and the name is not forthcoming. Then what the consequence of that is that the council becomes incorrect, that the council continues to run without a full quorum because the MECs have not appointed a suitable representative. So the minister was of the view that she should have the discretion that should the MECs not submit or nominate a provincial representative within 3 months, then she would be able to add or fill that vacancy by a suitable candidate, not necessarily from the province. Then the issue of the secretariat is also provided for. The issue, the question that we have, ladies and gentlemen, is it necessary to have provincial representatives on national councils? This matter was debated previously here by the in the committee, previous portfolio committee, and in other fora, and there were two schools of thought. The one school was saying we should not have provincial representatives on national councils, and then the other school was saying that because we have the system of government that we have currently, we need to make sure that the provinces are represented on the council. And so we've taken the latter view and to keep in line with the issue of the provincial representative, but not to be frustrated by the inability of the or the failure of the MEC to submit a name, and then the council does not become co-read and is unable to take resolutions and decisions. The minister deemed it prudent that we should go and look at filling of these vacancies should the need arise. Now, the Cultural Institutions Act is the main act. It deals with the museums and the other institutions. We are establishing a National Museums Division as a national heritage substructure, and it's consisting of the Director General and the CEOs of the institutions. Okay. Now, the reason for putting the Director General to lead this body is that this body is a think tank of the museum sector. It's the brains trust of the museums that come together. Currently, there is no statutory body existing, and we felt the need to do that. So with the DG leading, or the DG's representative leading these institutions, they will be able to apply their mind to the burning issues of policy, coordination, funding, etc., so that the advice that is given to the minister is actually very deeply thought out advice based on the experience. And then this is the coordinating structure for the museums and the heritage institutions. As you know, or may not know, the Cultural Institutions Act also includes the Performing Arts Councils. But there's never been a mention of the Performing Arts Councils. We have the Performing Arts Council that funded by the department, such as the PACOFs, the State Theatre, the Market Theatre, and KZN Playhouse, etc. And they've never been included in this legislation. So therefore, we took the opportunity to include for the first time the playhouses, and we have a list of the playhouses in the institution, in the Act. Now, one of the other challenges we found was that most of these legislations empowered the institution to formulate its own policy. That for us was a challenge, and it it must be that national department must formulate these policies. So we've taken away the policy formulation powers of these institutions, and we are saying that they are fine to make policies that are applicable to their own institution, but national policy formulation remains the prerogative and the preserve of the National Department of Arts and Culture. And of course, whatever policies that they formulate for their own institution must be consistent with the Constitution and in line with national policy. Now, the National Heritage Council, this is one of the pieces of legislation that we grappled on, and there was numerous debates and discussions about, and the department basically came back to say that the National Heritage Council's role of coordinating the sector, cannot be located within the National Heritage Council, because it is the responsibility of the department to coordinate the sector. And of course, the council itself resisted that notion of removing their powers, but the bill was signed by both ministers who accepted the position that the role of policy formulation, the role of coordination, the role of driving the heritage sector must be located within the department, and the department must define what the role of the National Heritage Council is going to be. So, amongst the other things were the issue of repatriation. Now, repatriation comes about in the Heritage Council legislation, but again, that responsibility is a national responsibility, and it's been taken away from the Heritage Council to be taken back by the department, and the department is busy with various policy documents on the issue of repatriation. My colleagues are here, they can talk more about that if necessary. Then, ladies and gentlemen, we want to move on then to the Community Libraries Bill. The Community Libraries Bill came about, I think for those of you that know Dr. Jordan, he was regarded as a champion of the library sector, and the current minister is quite keen to continue to support the libraries. The issue for the department is the closure of libraries, and certainly cannot be in the interest of the country when these places of learning are not accessible, for one, and are being closed because of various reasons. But the challenge of libraries is the challenge of funding. And hence we decided to go the route of a Community Libraries Bill, which is a norms and standards bill, which comes from Section 44 of the Constitution, which provides that when it is necessary and in the interest of the nation, national department can pass legislation that will be applicable down to the provinces and to the municipalities. So library services, as you know, is in terms of the constitution, national competency comes to the National Library of South Africa. The rest of it is either provincial or local competency in terms of the schedule of the constitution. So the main focus of the department was to drive the issue of community libraries, to ensure that the libraries remain open, to ensure that the libraries are funded, to ensure that the libraries remain resourced, and hence we've come up with the Community Libraries Bill. The bill was, again, the subject of consultation, went through the various processes, and then the bill culminates in a draft bill, which we know. The main objects of this bill is to promote access to community libraries and information services, is to provide national policy, principles, guidelines, and minimum norms and standards. As I say, linked to Section 44 of the Constitution. Minimum norms and standards. And it promotes cooperative governance between the three tiers of government, and equally important is access for libraries for all. Excuse me. And then when we look at the Community Library Bill, the important aspect of the bill is this norms and standards, and it prescribes what are the institutional arrangements, what are the norms and standards, and then starts off with the responsibilities of the national minister. Policy formulation and the formulation of minimum norms and standards for the library sector and for community libraries. Developing principles and criteria for allocation of public funds, monitoring, evaluation, and coordination of strategic planning and budgeting processes for libraries. The responsibilities of the MECs is formulation of provincial policy and minimum norms and standards, establishment and maintaining of provincial library services, develop principles and criteria for allocation of public funds, and again, monitoring, evaluation, and coordination of strategic planning and budgeting processes of libraries. And again, the institutional arrangements continue with regard to the responsibilities of municipalities. So you can see, ladies and gentlemen, that we are really going the cooperative governance route to have this cooperative arrangement between national, provincial, and local municipalities. The similar responsibilities articulated for the municipalities. So the Community Libraries Bill has been presented. It's currently going to be presented to the MINMEC. It is on our program. The Minister has approved of it, and then we have to see after it's presented to the MINMEC. The idea is to then table it to Cabinet. I'm going to not go on to the minimum norms and standards, because I think I spoke about that. The challenge of providing infrastructure, the public services, technical services, material, information, communication, technology, to ensure that the community libraries are staffed, that provision is made, that the libraries do not close because they simply do not have staff, and then to provide these requirements in turn to ensure that the libraries remain accessible. So that, in a nutshell, is the main thrust of the Community Libraries Bill, which is being championed by our library services within the National Department. Then, ladies and gentlemen, we move on to the Language Practitioners Council Bill, and my colleagues from the Language Services are here, so they can talk to the detail when we get to the discussion point. Now, there was a need, language practitioners, to establish a kind of statutory professional regulatory body for language professionals. And for many, many years, it has been the dream of the language professional professions to have this kind of regulatory body. And hence, the department has come up with this piece of legislation called the South African Language Practitioners Council Bill. The core functions of the council is to regulate the training of language practitioners, to provide for control over the accreditation and registration of language practitioners, and to provide for all matters dealing with language. I think it's a pretty important profession, and it doesn't have a regulatory body, and hence the need. I'm pleased to announce that the business case has now been finalized in consultation with the National Treasury. We got the document back from the Treasury last week, and I think that we will be bringing the business case as a full-on CAB memo to inform Cabinet about the outcome. What the challenge there was, ladies and gentlemen, was that the department had to come up with a council that would be serving the needs of this the body. And the council had not to be too big or too small, but it had to be the right size, it had to have the right blend of expertise and professionalism and skill that would serve the language professions. And we are pleased to say that the issues of the budget and the issues of the composition of the council has now been accepted in consultation with the National Treasury and the Department of Public Service Administration. Then the last one is the South African Languages Bill. Now, as you would know, the department is the champion of multilingualism, and this bill comes from Section 6 of the Constitution. In the year 2003-2004, the department drafted and presented to Cabinet South African Languages Bill that would entrench multilingualism as required in terms of Section 6 of the Constitution. It was presented to Cabinet, and the Cabinet Committee at that time referred it back to the department, and it said that the department must use policy and non-legislative means to advance multilingualism. Now, the department has been doing that. There are various projects, there are various policies that we have within the department to advance multilingualism to a great, great degree. And we thought that whilst it would be good to have the legislation, but if the cabinet at that time sent it back to the department, then we should work towards enhancing the policy framework and delivering the service through the policy. I think the issues were around the cost of this legislation, the cost of multilingualism across the government. And then what happened is that we had been in litigation with a gentleman called Mr. Lawrence, who's from the northern from Limpopo province. And his litigation was about the fact that the government as a whole had not passed legislation to promote multilingualism. His argument was the policy, whilst where the policy was good, the policy did not have teeth and enforcement mechanisms. And we met, the DG and our colleagues and the lawyers met with Mr. Lawrence in an attempt to resolve this matter and settle the case. Unfortunately, Mr. Lawrence was adamant that we should try to bring this legislation within 12 months. And we said to him that it's not possible, not reasonable, that you could do national legislation within 12 months. And then we did not agree. And he went to court, and he was given a court order, the long and the short of it, to say that the department must bring a piece of legislation dealing with multilingualism within a 24 month, within a 2 year period. So we brought back the National South African Languages Bill back to the table and put it back onto our program. And then we're going to submit it for the current cabinet to give us the way forward on this thing. The courts were saying that what we simply have is the constitution in section 6.4, which says that multilingualism must be promulgated, advanced through policy and legislation. If you read section 6.4 of the constitution, it's quite clear. There's the use of the word and therefore the minister, now we briefed the minister about this court case, and then her view is that we now take it back to cabinet and say, we have this legislation, it has already been drafted, it's sitting there, we might need to tweak it a bit, but then we bring it back to cabinet and the current cabinet decides how are we going to deal with the issue of multilingualism through the South African Languages Board. And I think the issue of the language regulation and multilingualism is very, very important. The department has prioritized that in its 10 key priorities, and I think that you will agree that it is a constitutional imperative wherein we have to advance multilingualism. The way forward with the legislation is the two bills, the Cultural Laws Amendment Bill and the Community Library Bill, are the main priorities for this year. And the bills have to be presented through the processes. The minister was of the view that because the Cultural Laws Bill was presented to the previous cabinet, we're not going to present it back to the cabinet. We're going to take it directly to parliament. And after the revisions, there were not substantive changes that would necessitate or warrant it be taken back to cabinet. The Community Libraries Bill, the cab memo has been sent, and the minister will table the Community Libraries Bill after we've gone through the presentation to the technical committee and to the member. So in a nutshell, I've tried to condense all these documents, this big bundle of documents, into this slideshow, and all of the information is in this bundle. Of course, I apologize that it came to you late, but suffice to say that we can engage on the content. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
Does that exhaust the presentation?
Yes, the actual slideshow.
So, I may invite engagement by honorable members. In your presentation, you did indicate that some of the experts in your team might like to add a thing or two. Could they do so now before I invite members to engage?
Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, I prefer that we just engage in questions and respond to questions. Otherwise, our colleague has covered everything that we wanted.
This being a democracy, and you said it yourself, that other members may add, we don't want to suppress anything that could assist honorable members. So if everybody sure you don't have anything to add then to the presentation, or maybe then participate as questions are raised. Okay?
Excuse me, Chairperson, if my colleague came with him, I have indicated that he would like to add.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members of Parliament. I just thought that maybe it's quite important that I do a little bit of elaboration on what my colleague has said, more particularly when it comes to issues of policy, that we are actually saying that policy is the regime of the department, and that institutions are actually implementing agencies. So it becomes very much important that policy is actually placed at the level of the department. And also, that also helps in terms of standardizing, so that you do not have different policy initiatives that are happening at all levels, that you have got one area where, you know, which is the center for policy. And of course, as my colleague has indicated, that institutions can do policies that are relevant to their own operations. But even those, they need to be in line with the national policy. But also, the issue of coordination, which my colleague has spoken about, that we have been having an institution in heritage that has been kind of playing a coordinating role. That actually also caused some problems, because now you had, you know, different centers of power. The department is seen to be an overarching department that needs to serve its own institutions. And now if you have got another layer which is saying it's coordinating institutions, then it becomes a problem, because at times the department would want to talk to institutions, and then the other institution will be calling other institutions that it says it's coordinating. And that also, we thought that it was just creating a problem for the sector. But also the whole issue of duplicating functions, we just thought that we need to deal with in terms of these amendments, so that we can ensure that the resources, the mega resources that are at the disposal of government, are actually being spent efficiently and economically. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other addition? Thank you. I know honorable members have been very hungry and wanted this item on the menu of our portfolio committee meetings, the issue of the legislation to consider whether any repeal is necessary, or amendment, or any new legislation to address possible legislative lacunae. And this is partial delivery by your good selves on these issues. Honorable members, I propose that we be structured in our engagement, and that structured approach would be we raise issues or comments as per the list that we have, so that we're not moving from one area to another. We have cultural laws and amendment bill. We raise issues with that. When we're done, community library bill, and when we're done, South African Language Practitioners Council bill, and when we're done, South African Languages bill. Honorable members, will that treat you fairly? Or would you prefer another approach where you jump from one item to another?
Chair, first of all, purely based on the fact that I do have to excuse myself in a minute or so, that I would want to ask one question for clarification. But other than that, I think it's going to be extremely difficult for us as members to actually now interrogate these votes because we have not seen them. I think we can purely ask perhaps general questions in terms of the process that's been followed. So I can't see myself...
We're not at that stage yet. We deal with what stage we have now here. I think the process will take us into those details later. But for now, we deal with these issues as they are presented. And your apology I've already accepted. You're going to write tough exams in criminal law, and criminals are becoming more sophisticated. So the apology will be accepted when it comes. But my joy comes, if body language is anything to go by, the tick bite is not actually... honorable members, could we follow that structure part? And now we raise issues. You said you wanted...
I just want one question.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to ask you something. You indicated right from the beginning that you now have the four pieces of legislation on the program. And then in the way forward, I don't quite see the Language Practitioners Council. I just want to be very sure on this one because this bill has now been there for 11 years. So what precisely is going to happen this year? We see the business case, but is it going to be tabled?
Yes. Thank you, ma'am. I think as I indicated, because of the shortened program and the World Cup, etc., we were saying that we would like to try and do the first two, the community and the community. But my sense is that we will have time because the business case is finished, and I think the importance of the legislation would precipitate or necessitate us taking it in the latter half. So it will be tabled.
Thank you. Honorable members, issues on the cultural law, Third Amendment Bill. Honorable member.
Chair, it's just that some weeks ago we did get copies of some of these bills. I'm not sure from who they came, whether you received them as well, but we did receive them and we did work through them. But obviously, one can really comment in depth when you start comparing in the next process what was in and what are the amendments. So there's not really logic in say about the laws. Needless to say, we are happy to have some of these during this year because we were asking for it for some time. But can I just be explained exactly when do we do, from other committees we had public hearings on this, when do you perceive that to take place on these two specific pieces of legislation this year? I'm just curious to see when that will happen in Parliament via the committee.
That's noted, another issue. Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm the presentation by... I've forgotten his name.
Mr. Singh.
As far as the presentation, one had a little bit of problem as far as the consultation, whether consultation has been done, let's say sufficient consultation has been done, when this thing, later the bills were really presented to us. But I know that it's long that we're waiting for a lot of things here to be legislated. Like now we're given the product, one has a little bit of problem as far as consultation is concerned.
Thank you. Next. One to take five. If we don't, honorable.
Yes.
Whilst I uh,
whilst I recognize the fact that it may not be anyone's fault for myself not being able to go through the document, the same document that was actually sent to us, I apologize really because I only arrived this early morning. And mine is to just, as a point of clarity, on 4.4, extension of term of the transfer from 3 years to 4 years. I didn't capture really reasons for 3 years to four or not to 5 years. Could I probably get some clarity onto that one? And going down to performance agreement and code of conduct for CEO, I don't know if one could probably get access onto some details of that, if possible. And number last would be the last bullet. That who would be, in fact, I just wanted to say, to ask whether the reimbursement for reasonable expenses for council members, what would be involved in that? Because you can't probably, of course, reimburse, you know, somebody with everything. It's just that clarity that I wanted.
Please make the department respond.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think between Mr. Singh and Mr. Ndimata, they will be able to handle this, particularly the questions of the performance of the CEOs, or well, let me just get into it. The issue of consultations and the processes, Mr. Singh will answer to that because he's been intimately involved with that. The question of the extension of term of office from 3 to 4 years. The explanation that was given was that the time given to these councils is not adequate for them to actually be able to carry out or fulfill their mandate, in the sense that, for example, in the first year they would be still trying to get themselves familiarized with the role of the institution, their mandates, and so forth, and that we were looking for an extension to 4 years. If probably the question that the Honourable Mr. Chukela is raising is whether we should not move from 3 to 5, I think we can discuss that. We wouldn't be opposed to it. But for us, what is important is the stability of the councils. And that's the first one. Secondly, there is something that we are realizing, is that we do not get enough people to serve on these councils. It's a struggle to recruit people to serve on these councils because somehow people feel that we are not paying, for them to be in this council. So the result is that you find a person who serves on the council of the Iziko Museums, and then that very same person serves on the council of South African Heritage Resources Agency, the pool. Is getting smaller and shallower. And that is the challenge that we are having there. I don't know what it is that we will have to do to encourage the South African public to carry on to volunteer in this in this sector. And I don't think it's a question of people not knowing or not being interested in the issues of arts, culture, and heritage. But I think that we still have to interrogate that. But yes, indeed, if Mr. Chukela is suggesting moving from 3 to 5, it is an issue that when we are getting to that detail, we can look at. What could be involved in the remuneration of council members, questions of travel, and if they are asked to do that. It's basically subsistence and travel, really. Yeah, it is just that, nothing really more, because we do not pay for our councils. They volunteer to do the work, and so that is the challenge we have there. Performance of the CEO agreement. The problem we have, or it's not a problem, probably, let's use the contemporary jargon, the challenge we have is that, as Mr. Singh had earlier indicated, 75%, almost 70% actually, of our budget is transferred to these institutions, be they playhouses, be they museums, and so forth. Therefore, these institutions become the delivery arm of the ministry and therefore government. And we can't get into a situation where we just transfer that amount of money and there is no kind of agreement in terms of outputs and outcomes of those institutions. One of the let me describe a scenario that is happening at the present moment. We're getting a situation where institutions give us their strategic plans. They might amend those strategic plans along the way, and then the next thing we get is a report. All right. And then we have got to come to Parliament and you honorable members ask us a question. But how are these institutions performing and delivering in terms of the money of government? If we are saying it's asked for all, how do we ensure it is asked for all? Now, one needs to be quite careful here, because we are enforcing accountability and performance. All right. Now, we do not want this to be interpreted as if we are interfering with a so-called arm's length situation of our institution. Because the question of arm's length is actually based on non-interference in the artistic product itself. But we want to be able to say there must be an agreement, an agreed-upon framework for us to deliver quality and ensure that the South African public, when it invests 1.4 billion in the area of arts and culture, it can basically say, out of that 1.4 billion, we have managed to get what we want. And giving you a specific example, we have got a situation where I'm sitting here, and I do not know what the CEO of the Pan South African Language Board was doing and was intending to do. and mine was only to sign off the transfer payment to Pan South African Language Board. But how that was impacting on the promotion of multilingualism and so forth, promotion of multilingualism, the mandate, constitutional mandate, and the policy mandate of the department, I was done. And surely there is an anomaly in that. And these are the challenges that we are trying to address. The matter of consultation, Mr. Singh, you had referred to this matter. Can you please, if you will allow, Chairperson?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DG. Just to elaborate and add to what the DG is saying, the first question is regarding the public hearings. I think when the department formally presents the legislation to the committee, then it's up to the committee to decide to hold public hearings on this matter. What we have done as our own internal and external consultations across the board. In other words, we've consulted the institutions, national, provincial, local government, SAGA. We've consulted the consultation, the policy review process that led to this council law book. It's got volumes of reports that detail exactly when these public consultations were held. They were held across the provincial spread, geographical spread, and there's two reports, the overall policy review report and the legislative review report. So there's detailed consultations. And then we ended the consultations, and then we embarked on a further consultation, the final round of consultations with Minister Tinkwana, when she hosted the institutions at the National Library in Pretoria last year. And then from that stage, she said, go and consult widely again. And we did that, and we culminated in this process. So we have detailed documentation that shows exactly when we held these consultations, reports, in other words. And then we have a summary of everyone's input. Like if some person, a language practitioner or cultural practitioner, saw, read about this legislation and said, what does it mean for me? He sent me an email. We have logged that email, and we have a detailed summary of what his input is. And we've reviewed that in consultation. And then we came up with the final version that we are presenting to Cabinet, to Parliament in terms of this. So, in my view, it's always difficult to say what is sufficient consultation, because when people have to give inputs, they do give inputs. When people are consulted and they don't agree, then they say they were never consulted, with all due respect. So I think that the department has done justice to the consultation process. We can provide these documents to the committee that show the extent of the consultation. But when the committee itself is vested with dealing with this legislation and taking it forward, the committee can determine what public hearings it wants to have. And I think it would be important that the public hearings be structured and go ahead, and then there could be institution-specific hearings and then general public, you know, because the legislation impacts on the institutions can be engaged on the content of the legislation, which we've already done, and then the general public, the cultural practitioners, etc. Then the extension of the term, I concur with DG Wakashi that the 3-year to 4-year was for the sake of continuity, for ensuring greater stability, for ensuring greater integrity with that council, institutional memory, etc. But if it is deemed to be prudent that we should rather go 5 years, then we're not averse to going to the route of 5 years. The issue of the performance agreement and the code of conduct is actually the mechanism that we have drafted them, but we haven't presented them. We have a master agreement. It's like a sort of shareholder compactum, which the public entities have, whereby that agreement would be signed between the minister and the CEO. Then the council or the board is responsible for the performance agreement of its CEO. And I want to reiterate what the DG is saying. The issue is about performance and about accountability and to hold people accountable for the public funds that they have spent. We'd be happy to share those documents with the committee. As I said, the performance agreement of the council, which the chairperson of the council will sign, is linked up to their strategic plan. It has to be linked up to the strategic plan because the strategic plan is the document which sets out what they will deliver, and they have to be judged on what they deliver. If they set out that they want to deliver 5 or 10 things within the 4-year period, then by the end, or with periodic assessment, we will kind of check how far they have gone, to what extent they have delivered, you know. And I think the tool that we have there is a good instrument to judge whether the council has achieved its core mandate, but also whether it has spent its funds in a prudent manner for which it was intended. I think there are two issues with the council. The one is to what extent it has delivered on its core function, the core mandate, and the other one is the governance and financial accountability. And that both are equally important. Then, regarding the remuneration structure, the National Treasury has a document called the System of Remuneration. It comes out of the public office bearer's remuneration structure. So the department engages the public, the National Treasury, with this. So when the bill is passed and the bill becomes law, the Treasury is aware that we are coming. They have given us the go-ahead to use the concept of remuneration. And as DG said, we struggle to get members to serve on these boards. And if I may say, the current, probably the going rate that we pay maybe a chairperson is about 700 Rand per meeting, and a normal member maybe 600, you know. And whether that's adequate or not, it's for us to encourage more people to come. But what goes into that process is a detailed elaboration of this document, which is done in consultation with the department and the National Treasury. I mean, it's applicable for all the public boards and members that serve on the public boards. So it is not a kind of artificial exercise or an ad hoc exercise. It's what is the rate that we must remunerate a person based on expertise, based on experience, based on the skills that they have. But as I said, we cannot hope to remunerate them at the same rate they would earn on serving on the public board. Hence, it's a public good. And they are serving the nation for that. And whilst we have these concepts and these notions, I think it's important for us to do justice to them. But the challenge that we have is that it's becoming increasingly difficult when we call for public nominations. Sometimes we don't get sufficient people that nominate people to serve in the board. And that is a huge challenge for us in terms of. So once these legislation, the Cultural Laws Amendment Bill, becomes law, then we will do a detailed set of regulations that will articulate all the detailed provisions, operational provisions, and the bill sets out the principle and the main point of what we want to do. But the regulations which are in draft form will specify the devil is in the detail, and the regulations will contain.
No, I think.
Honorable members, the issues and questions you raised, have they been addressed, all of them? It appears they've been addressed. Are you on cultural law third amendment bill? Because otherwise we'll move what we agreed to the next. Have to, you know, there will be people who serve, you know, 2 or 3 years or whatever.
because I remember I once sat on one board and we had that kind of arrangement where you had people who stand around for 5 years and those who serve for 3 years. So when the 5 years come and you still have people who will stay on for another 2 years or so, so maybe you could consider.
It's just what Honourable Peter just said, but I think we will get to that when we discuss the finer detail. But we've seen it in our term of office, in fact, with some of the CEOs and others in PANSELF and other entities of this department in the last 6 years, that there were problems on this term. But I think we can discuss that when we do the detail of the bills when they're in front of us and discuss the pros and cons. Because it also goes with the 5 years maybe of term of office of us might not be a good idea. I mean, I don't know until we study the documents properly on what our view will be. But we have seen that there were problems. People inherited the previous council, which they couldn't work with, and it resulted in non-performance, so to speak, and people didn't work well, and others could work well. So I think that those are the details that we'll have to thoroughly discuss when we get the bills in front of us on the day.
Okay. The legislation does provide for a renewable term. So if a person can serve currently like 3 years, and then that certain of the members can be reappointed for a further 3 years, and then the same provision would be applicable once this legislation is passed. So they, to ensure greater continuity, because I think that if you keep replacing brand new people, there's no institutional memory and continuity. So the current legislation does provide for a renewable term up to 2 terms, maximum of up to 2 terms. So you could serve a first term of 3 years and a second term of 3 years, and if this legislation is passed, then we will have a similar process.
Thank you very much, honorable members. So, in principle, the consensus is that the element of continuity needs to be respected and provided for through whatever mechanism we make part of this legislation. Either staggered composition or renewability within the parameters of the stipulation of not serving more than 2 terms. Thank you very much. Let us. You realize some of the issues actually they stretch across all the 4 that we have here. I deliberately allowed that to happen because the item seems to be relevant to all 4, while the focus is different with each bullet that we have here. We are on community library bill. We'll take 5 if we have 5 comments and questions. Yes, not because I'm worried you will not make it to tomorrow. But because I knew it was not the chief part. It was the teacher. Okay. Thank you very much. You can't feel well if you have not written your speech. Thank you. Honorable members, honorable.
Thank you very much. Honorable Desiree has suffering from tea fever, maybe we don't know. But, go.
I'll hear that anyway.
Okay, if things are said in your absence, I'll protect you.
I'll put some D next to you.
Thank you.
Like it is said, that is a bill. I mean, bills are bills. You can discuss bills when they are already in place. Not yet, but we can sort of like suggesting that while deliberating on the very same bill, as far as the community libraries are concerned, you know that my vein is always on the rural area. That take into consideration that the rural areas, more especially community art center, those that are really, I mean, I can say they are neglected. That's my assumption, that they are really, really, really neglected. Because most of the libraries are in cities, big cities. But now it's happening in the rural areas. I would like, if we're talking with our, with a budget in front of us, that at least you consider it serious, really. Because we are really doing, we're really punishing those people in rural areas. Like now we're just discussing the bills that are in place, but not yet, you know, slaughter or post-mortem the bills. We would like to advise you, then advise that one would suggest that as far as libraries are concerned, and the heritage sites still.
We are on community library.
Yeah. I wanted to do that.
We'll stick to that. But I thought on libraries, you indicated you want to have access, equal access to libraries anywhere and everywhere in the country. And that's why I thought the policy issue should rest with the department to ensure that according to the determination of that policy, there should be no marginalized part of South Africa, whether it's at Mlamlankunzi or at Mahlabathini or Chififi. There should be equal accessibility. I think it's highlighted in your summary there. Any other input or question?
Mine would not be anything like a question. You know, just probably a clarity on the last bullet, 5.1.
Honorable members, by your own agreement, we said we'll follow a structured pattern. We're dealing with community libraries. It's critical we focus there. And if there's nothing, we pass. So we're still dealing with bullet two. Anything on community library? There seems to be nothing. But maybe you want to comment on the issues raised by Honorable Chivase beyond the comments I've made, because
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, indeed, the rural areas continue to not to be neglected, but continue to have less infrastructure. But I think that we should draw comfort in the manifesto of the ruling party when it focuses on rural development, that each and every ministry, each and every department is looking at that. And I know that perhaps I might be speaking out of turn, but just a few days ago, I think it was last week, when the president signed performance agreements with the ministers, and I just had an opportunity to have a look at some of the frameworks, and of course, rural development is there, and it is key. And also, I mean, equally important is that my own performance agreement with my political principal will also have to reflect that. And therefore, it becomes a measure of, it becomes a mechanism or a tool to measure a performance. But we are very much focused in terms of rural development. It's one of our key performance areas. So we do take that on board. And if perhaps there might be a need to tighten or to strengthen the languages on the frameworks on the bill, I think when we get into the detail, we will also have an opportunity to also get another bite on this. And lastly, Chairperson, is that without these norms and standards, it's been quite a challenge for us, because different spheres of government have been pulling in different directions when it comes to the question of libraries. And the fact that we have been pulling in different directions has, of course, affected delivery on the ground. But it's a challenge that I think we are ready to confront. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mm-hmm. The other dimension of Honourable Chivas's question or suggestion was that the budget must speak the language that you are speaking. The Honourable is from a rural area, so she wants to see the policy translated into the budget and the budget translated into those project lending in those rural areas. You presented your budget, and I'm happy to say yes, there is money set aside to address land transformation and rural development, and we believe also in this area of libraries that the budget language will speak the strategic plan, the policy language. I think that's one thing she wanted to be assured of. Thank you. We go to bullet three. South African Language Practitioner Council Bill. And let's ask questions, because they did present the meat, summarized meat of what is there. So we can ask for clarity or for more information, but let us not ask questions which are answered already in the document before us. Let's take five. I see the Honourable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think DDG, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Ndima will agree with me when I talk of the council, and that is on building the language council, which we had a big problem with the funding. I don't know which practitioners are really referring to as far as language practitioners are concerned and the training of those people. Who are these people who are about to be trained? Thank you.
Mr. Ndima.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it should be Dr. Jogan.
There's a second question. I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. Oh, who's responding to that?
It's Dr. Jogan who deals with the language.
Oh, okay.
thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Honorable Mrs. Chivas. I know you are very, very familiar with the issues around languages. We have been with you on a number of occasions. The question that you are asking is very, very relevant, to say that when we talk about the language practitioners, whom are we referring to? In a summarized form, language practitioners simply refer to everyone who is practicing on a language, be it a translator, terminologist, human language technology practitioner, teacher who is teaching language, literature person, and so on. The list is really endless. This matter has been dealt with in a number of occasions where in all the forums where the issue of the South African Language Practitioners Council deal was discussed. Precisely for the same reason, I believe, that you are asking this question, because people would be wondering as to whether are we really talking about people who are working in government. We know in all spheres of government, talk about language practitioners in municipalities, the provinces, national government departments, and so on. But all of those people are doing different jobs, but within the language practice. And as I said earlier, broadly speaking, it refers to anyone who is practicing or whose job is in the area of language. I know that you might yourself, honorable member, be familiar with a non-statutory body that is in existence now, which, of course, is not a government body, the SATI. The emphasis on that one is mainly on translators. And that's where then this question that you have asked becomes very, very crucial. Because one would learn who is knowledgeable of that structure, think that the South African Language Practitioner Council that we're talking about is also going to be of translators. It cuts across the very broad spectrum of language practice. It's not confined to translators only. Thank you very much.
You want to add?
Yes. Thank you.
If you add in, you've not said anything about sign language. Those people practice that language too. And language practitioners impact a lot on our languages are media people. Whether you're talking radio or you're talking television and print, it's sometimes very frustrating to watch these media people confusing language, mixing language, making use of wrong language that impact on both the language capacity formation, especially of the younger generation, especially when it comes to African languages. The colonization of our languages in one form or another although we'll discuss this when we deal with 2010 programs, sport language practitioners, even on soccer, as you and I sit here, you have to listen to the commentators, the challenge of terminology and vocabulary for our sport codes is highly challenging. I think these are the issues we practical, real, day-to-day issues would like to see addressed as we deal with legislative parameters dealing with these issues. You may add, including commenting on what I said, and Doctor, you're welcome to come back.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to just add to what Dr. Chiweni is saying, also in a way of underscoring everything he has said, because just what you've said right now is very, very important to realize that and to recognize that this profession is not regulated. The standards and the norms are not known. Levels of proficiency, if you were to be a court interpreter, are you, you know, who, how much must you earn? If you're a freelancer, you know, given a job by a private company or a bank or even a government, you know, what is it you are doing when you are translating, when you are interpreting, when you are writing a dictionary, when you are, you know, I mean, what are the levels and what would your job description be, and how is the service rated that you are providing, and the people that are actually recipients of the service, how are they assured that this is quality, and including the examples you've just given in terms of you know, broadcasting, journalism, but mostly we're talking about the work that government is looking to doing that will be related more, you know, to actually even populating or making sure that these language units we're talking about in order to implement the policy of multilingualism, to make sure that government actually does deliver on what is promised, that people will receive, you know, service in a preferred language. Now, those are the practitioners that will sit there and say, we're going to translate this gazette, we're going to do this, we're going to get make sure that government information is accessible to the public, and so forth and so on. And as Dr. Chiweni is saying, covers the broad spectrum, but the problem with the sector, it is just out there. Anybody just does anything and nobody really knows. There are no standards. There's no regulation. It's not professionalized. And yet this is the core of the business, of communication of government with the people. So I think it is very clear that it is a really sensitive issue. It is very serious. It is about time it was addressed, but only a council that the minister is in charge of as a mechanism of implementation should actually be charged with the responsibility to ensure that the standards are complied with, that for instance the Hansard, you know, is properly you know, translated and documented and accessible to the language, and that must be quality work. Somebody has to make sure that there is not going to be a negative feedback about that. Somebody must regulate that. That's what it is. Thank you, Chief.
Dr. Joweni, you want to come back?
Yes, Joweni. Yes, Joweni, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
He's younger than me. He caught the cake.
Yeah, just to come back to cover the last question you asked to be covered on the sign language and the other aspects, of course. Like as I said earlier, we're moving away from that thinking of saying when we talk about language practitioners and then we seem to be restricting them to translators, as it is the case in the current existing professional body, which is non-statutory. We're saying there is no limit, as Dr. Subban has just said. In other words, practitioners who are using sign language, people who are working in radios and so on, all those, if they are practiced is in the language, then they are all covered. And in fact, that actually defines what a language practitioner is. So because previously it looks like there was a very, very limited kind of definition to think about somebody with translating and so on. But this time we're saying there's no limit. And we can mention all these professions. The list is endless. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much. The definition does not exclude members of parliament. Are we still together? They are language practitioners. It does not exclude officials of the Department of Arts and Culture. They are also language practitioners. Honorable.
Adding to the question of language practitioners, as long as the co-instants were really complaining about the seriousness of our department, we seem to be neglecting.
That will come under the next item. Yes.
Is it not falling under the practitioners that?
Let's debate. Discuss that, I think, and South African Languages Bill. Are we agreed? Thank you. They are related, practitioners and also the languages, they are related, but I just thought strategically we should have that done. But they are related. Have we exhausted practitioners? And thank you very much, Honorable Chivase. Often we just discuss theory, we don't relate it to the incarnation of who is the practitioner doing. That helps a lot. We are on bullet 4, South African Languages Bill. Comments, input, questions. Maybe we can begin with you, Honorable Chivase. Already the issue you were raised, the question. No, you had not finished your question or input when I made the suggestion.
Thank you very much. I'm not dominating the question, the section. The reason I'm pursuing this issue of languages, it is because most of the languages are really undermined. That they're not even developed, like you even mentioned, the sign language, but still the Khoisan language is one of those languages which are really left behind, and they complain, we also complain time and again, that what are the, can I say, screws and bars to develop the language, because they have their own language. Thank you.
Any other question on the language bill? If not, there are languages, I think that's what she's saying, who are recognized as languages spoken in South Africa, but which have not been made part of the 11 official languages. What is their status? How does this bill address that legislative lacuna? Then there are languages which do not as yet enjoy the status that the Constitution has enshrined for them, and they have not actually achieved that status. Either through our own practice, we undermine the Constitution, or neglect, or budget constraints. These are the challenges. In trying to address, for example, those issues here. If you go by road signs, signposts, I think we need to declare if you prepare all the signposts in English throughout the Western Cape or in Cape Town, how do we explain that constitutionally? How do we explain that in terms of legislation? It may be gentleman's agreement, but it is constitutional, it's legal. Can somebody not take up the cause and win? Just remember the time for this. You have the time for the portfolio committee and time to do it. We have before raised the issue of a language now C5 here, and there are many times everywhere. Welcome Argentina, welcome this. It's almost 99.9% English. In some ways, highly insulting in areas where the majority on a daily basis don't speak English. And I've said it is meant for the Argentinians, but they must also learn to respect the fact that we ourselves respect our language. And Professor Petitra Kwa at our workshop has indicated that until we ourselves respect our own language, nobody will respect either us or the language that we actually speak. And the penalties provided for those who violate the Constitution, the letter, the spirit of the Constitution. It might be a municipality violating that, or a province, or a department, or a teacher. It doesn't matter who, but as a penalty and incentive that can assist us forward to begin to take this issue seriously. In Parliament, you can stand up and use any other language. Some of them you must inform the translators or interpreters on time so that they know you're going to use your mother tongue, but you're going to do the same with English. These are facilitation mechanisms, but again, they suggest the languages are not equal. That means the translators and the interpreters cannot instantly move from one gear to another. There are some inferior languages where you must warn the interpreters and translators days in advance. Already do a much better, is a pluma, is a zulu, is a teta, is a cob, in advance. It means we are crossing our practice, undermine our own language. I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying, as we work with legislation, unless we begin to address those issues and include the possibility of penalty for failure to respect the Constitution, maybe we might not move that far. Any other comment or addition? is not the department they mean it.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I honestly need to start off by commending yourself and Mrs. Chivase, more so because I'm impressed with the insights that you seem to be having about the issues of language. And the questions that you have asked, you have elaborated on the very specific questions that she asked first. And that is very, very critical in the sense that, again, more often than not, people seem to think that when you talk of African languages, or let's say South African languages, in this case we're talking about South African languages here, and then they will just think of the 11 official languages. And you are actually asking as to whether are we confined again or not, what about other languages? To start with, I just want to read a paragraph which defines in the very, very deal that was referred back previously what these South African languages it's all about. It says South African languages means all the indigenous languages as defined herein, as well as all other languages generally used in South Africa, including those referred to in Section 6 of the Constitution. When my colleague, Mr. Singh, presented earlier, he referred to Section 6 of the Constitution, where all these languages deal. Actually emanating from. And so cognizance is taken care of those languages that are not necessarily accorded the official status, including the sign language. I must mention that before you ask, that all that is taken care of. And like again, as you indicated earlier, to say that these two documents or bills are interrelated. The elaboration that you have just made on the issues of the signs and so on and so forth, that again is about the regulation of the languages or of the use of the languages. Now and again, stakeholders or organizations that deal with the issues of language, they all seem to be speaking in unison when it comes to the issue of the seriousness of the lack of the legislation. That brings us to the gist of the whole issue of needing to have this South African Language Act. Because they would say, even if you have structures in place that are supposed to be guarding against the abuse of languages, you know, if you allow me to use that word. And then, but the fact of the matter is that there is no legislation, and it is only the policy. And then they say the policy doesn't help the chief. So I'm coming then to the questions that you raised about what is there in place to ensure that these languages are protected, official or not official, not only protected but also respected. But if there is a legislation, it means that, you know, it's not only a matter of talking about the policy, because people seem to be thinking that, well, I may be enforcing the policy or respecting or disrespecting these languages, but if there is no legislation, what is going to happen? That's why there is always this outcry of the lack of teeth. And this is exactly what this is aimed at achieving, this legislation, to ensure that respect, that protection, everything that is entailed in the Section 6 of the Constitution. So, Chair and Honorable Members, I think by giving that overview, I'm saying, yes, indeed, every other language, and we don't believe that it is a language that is inferior. The fact that it is not an official language, that does not mean that it is an inferior language.
voice and languages are mentioned in the constitution, and PenSALP has been given responsibilities to ensure that sign language and voice and languages are promoted and so on. Now and again, to conclude, we have responded to parliamentary questions where the question would be asking how much has been done to promote those languages, and in many cases, PenSALP would bring evidence to say that on the side of Khoisan, sign languages and so on, this is what we have done. But we believe that with the bill, I mean legislation, we will do more. Thank you, Chair.
Unless there are other comments and questions, we'll gravitate towards closing this engagement and give the direct to portfolio committee members. But before we do that, we must thank the department for this presentation. As I say, honorable members have been very hungry for this item, and rightly so. Our first task is to legislate, and we are not worthy of the name Member of Parliament of the National Assembly unless we find ourselves engaged with this aspect. So this has helped us a lot. But we had identified another lacuna, which we'll again have to discuss under this aspect. The case of Google Cup. Because we understand that the decision was taken, that the necessary amendments have not been done yet. Okay, we'll need to actually look at those questionable gray areas because we must get them into the process. You'll discuss that amongst yourselves, but know that this is of great interest to the portfolio committee. And we also want to appreciate the teeth that you are bringing into the core function of the department, the dimension of the team, where when you transfer funds to agencies, it will become possible to prescribe the policy. And within the parameters of those policies, the agencies will come with their strategic plans, which must also speak to your strategic plan, which of necessity on your part, your strategic plan must also speak to the state of the national affairs. So that fluidity is critical, but also the accountability part of it, because these are taxpayer funds. You cannot transfer and fail to account or be failed by others to account for taxpayer money. I think we are happy to know that those teeth are growing and we're actually moving in the right direction. Another observation that's quite interesting that we should never lose is the continuity element in the appointment we make for the management of the council and I think it's critical that our democracy is not like an unguided missile just running in any direction. It might even hit downtown Cape Town when you want it to hit an enemy camp. So those issues are very, very important. But also the kind of prioritization and agency that you bring in your lineup here. It's important that what remains is the time frame that must guide us to deliver. It's one thing presenting a list, it's another matter having a driver who must ensure that within given time frames we deliver. We have 5 years and we've eaten up another year already. That means we left with 4 years, part of which is taken by our well-deserved honor to host the Soccer World Cup this year and local government elections that will come. So there's really very little that remains of our this year. So we need to take that into account as we strive to deliver. But there's been no reason why every other department can deliver plentiful legislative pieces, and it's only us and culture that will have to explain that all these things have made it impossible for us to deliver, whereas others have delivered. It's not possible. It's not believable. We need, with the constraints that we have, to deliver within given time frame. Is my information that other members have not received the invitations, such as Honorable Manuleke, a secretary, he says he never received anything. He only heard about the meeting this morning from here saying the public. So can you just follow up and establish what happened? And if I speak on Honorable Manuleke, establish what was the cause so that it doesn't happen again. And Honorable, if you are not satisfied, let me know. Because it cannot be that everybody gets invited and you're left out. You have to understand what happened. All of the other issues I raised previously concerning inconveniences, the Secretary has apologized and is working on answers on those issues that I raised. Now, as our way forward, honorable members have indicated it's not good news that a big pile like this is emailed yesterday. Oh, it's not email, it's courier yesterday to reach out from where we are already in session here. That's to ensure members don't read. And that result has been achieved. We've not been able to read this one during this session. And that's why some of the questions we ask the honorable members may be quietly and silently regarded as stupid by your mother. Because you say, but everything is in the document. And yes, this is the document. And if I'm asked to write an exam on this one, I'll only project what you presented onto this one and maybe get symbol B, because I've not had an opportunity to do it. From the very beginning, we've indicated members must get these documents well in advance. So we shall not take kindly in the future to this kind of behavior. We don't want to censure you. We co-workers. They are not boys and girls here and buses and misses. We co-workers. Some in the political arena, some in the administrative arena. We're building this country together. So let us work in such a way that nobody is disadvantaged in the work that they actually need to do. An issue was raised about the sufficiency of consultation. And your boosters have indicated that you have plenty of information on the consultative process that has been done. I think the committee must satisfy itself about the adequacy of those processes, because that will partly also inform our need and expense for public hearings on those issues. We don't want to do certain things for the sake of doing them. We must do them as required by the bill processes, what is required for us to get portfolio committee. But also we need to get the other information so that we can do whatever we decide to do intelligently. So I think the committee will still have to take a decision on that matter when all things have been taken into account. With this Manywer, I think I'm one of you who acknowledge Manywer when I've used Manywer, and never say fewer when I've actually used Manywer. That means I'm a good mathematician when it comes to counting well. Thank you very, very much. And pass it on to the minister that we've understood non-appearance here because of the cabinet commitment. I think when she made that request, she's not the president, she didn't know how long the cabinet session will be. It might be out by now, but at the time she made the request, you might not know how long that process will take. We'll be very happy to have her here. If the wish of the committee must be taken seriously, 2010 presentation must be the next very important thing to come before us. Am I right? So, President Charles, work in that direction with the department so that we get that presentation as early as last week. Thank you very much. We shall release you, but members must remain. Thank you. Mr. Wapash.
I've noted at Chairperson that you have got difficulties with the case. But, Chairperson, thank you very much for all what you have said. I won't respond to it point by point, but we have taken note of everything. We will convey to the minister your message, and I'm very, very happy to hear you mentioning the word a castle of good hope, and it's something that we would like to engage with, and we are looking forward to seeing the members of the portfolio committee during our budget vote tomorrow, and of course and afterwards when we will have the budget dinner, and we have had an opportunity to present our budget, the medium-term expenditure framework strategic plan is also with you. So we hope that tomorrow we will, we wish and hope that tomorrow we'll have a wonderful budget vote. And thank you very much for your continued support and interest in the work that we do. We very much appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You are released and the
Yes, sir.
Did I hear you saying okay to dial it from us and touch?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
unless they just say they're coming to resolve that the report will not be adopted. So basically, the committee resolved that while the report should be discussed, it should not be adopted as the report of the committee.
And then we did the same.
Yeah, we resolved that we discussed the report, but that it could not be adopted as the report of the committee. Any other comments on page 2?
It's the next paragraph. The chairperson allows questions on the highlights of the presentation and also makes a point about why it was difficult to join the meeting. It was much better.
To join the meeting, join by whom?
Oh yeah, no, no, because here it's the way it's like the chairperson came later. The way it's put here, it's like it's in chair who are like this.
The point about why it was difficult for Mr. Tanzain to join the meeting here. Join and not rejoin, isn't it? Urging that in future we should prioritize the college.
Yeah, the involvement of the committee was great, and I don't know much involvement in that.
That's the next paragraph.
Yeah,
any other thing?
The next thing.
Okay, let's get on to that.
I think something
I see. You see, on page 2, on argument, they inquired as to why it was necessary to adopt the report, set out that the adoption of the report related to the past modified by the House. He concluded by, you see, when we debate a matter, when we conclude, it should not be the conclusion of one person. If the debate and the committee resolved or concluded, so that it's not personal.
Because
a person can raise an issue, and all other people can raise an issue. But when we reach
the committee concluded.
No, but like in that context, it is not like that thing that. That was the end of the point, the input he was making. And that conclusion is that about that, not concluding the debate.
We concluded by indicating that the document put before the committee should have in fact come before the budget presentation.
That's what we all
decided.
I may have said. But that's
what it is. That's what I am reflecting.
What you said. But then what, it doesn't say what the committee concluded on that issue.
The fact of the matter is
it's fine, like Minister, but
you must
not have to
like
a certain.
Basically, many other people said many other people.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the committee concluded this way. And then, consideration of minutes. Members suggested changes and corrections. In doing minutes, we indicated that paragraph this was changed to read this. Paragraph this was changed to read this. Paragraph this was changed to read this. Because if we say members suggested changes and corrections, the chairperson asked for a mover and a second. Honorable Lopez moved for adoption and Honorable Mandulay as a context. Minutes were adopted, we don't even know what we adopted. because it's not reflected. In this minute, the corrections must be reflected on what were the content of the correction. I hope I'm right or wrong. With every minute, that's what we do. You might have written that in the old minute, but that's not the part of the new minute.
Yes, that's what I normally do.
Once we make amendments, the amendment, the things must come here for the committee to determine whether the amendments are what they make. When they are made, they say, yes, this is how we amended, then you submit to my office and I sign. But it must pass here before the committee. That's the procedure. The example normally does the procedure, and I think one of the good members agree. Does the procedure, the amendment must come back to the committee.
No, sir, I was going to say that normally when we amend legislation and like that, that's precisely the hope that before, in when we deal with legislation. For minutes, I know that I noted this way.
Let me check with honorable members. What is your position? Should the amendment come back here part of the minute, or should they just be processed to the chapter?
You know, it's helpful that we actually know what it is, because we adopt, like, formally now, what it is that the change that we made. Because that becomes part of this. So what? Because now I don't know what those corrections look like or what they, and we adopt them with amendments. But it should have said with the following amendment. We adopt it with the following amendment. Because it is, it says the minutes were accordingly adopted. But we've made amendments.
Yes.
It would be helpful if we make this thing, we know that, you know, this is how we adopted those
things. Okay, thank you very much. I believe many of us have been chairpersons of many committees, and that's the procedure we follow. And that's what we want here. So we will go and effect those. Today we will not be able to adopt this minute. We'll only make corrections, and you'll go and make them. And when they are reflected here, then we'll be able to adopt. So that's the issue I raised there. Then let me check. All the other things you had, I had too. Any other business? Honorable Lothrit made the point that she was not getting any support from the department in terms of information, and her calls were not answered. She also said that the Director General did not follow up on his promises, adding that he must provide tangible proof of activities. First is the same issue that we discussed around Honorable Manule. She did raise them, and I know we did have a short discussion and concluded, and we said, Honorable Members, if and when they've raised issues and no responses have been given, that they should, as we meet the department again, on those issues so that we get a progress report on those issues, and together we can actually address the minister. So we reached that consensus that honorable members should raise those issues again, and the department must be required to give a progress report. But also, adding that he must provide tangible proof of activities,
We've not mentioned anything here what activities we're talking about. I believe it's in connection. She also said that the delegation did not follow up on his promises, adding that you must provide tangible. So, apparently, with this thing, and who was not there will not even understand what the minutes are dealing with. So, we need to be specific. Amongst other things, I want to believe we're dealing with issues of FIFA. As you move to the next page, 3. She was not getting those reports and the committee said this matter should be raised next time we meet the department. And the department must be required to give a progress report on those issues. Page 3. Any amendments?
The involvement of the committee was also raised and discussed. So I don't know the involvement of the committee in what. It could either be the state of the committee or.
Okay. Let's clarify that and correct it.
Or the involvement of the committee in.
I have that also.
In the 2010 preparation.
So I also have that involvement in what, but also an interest was also expressed on the progress report on soccer terminology. I think basically what we're saying here, that the committee was not satisfied about its involvement in the processes. In the process for preparation for the FIFA World Cup. And I know we also said we don't even have a copy of the soccer terminology book, and we're not even sure whether it has been completed. Those were the issues. We need to be very specific so that the minutes become meaningful. So that will need to be corrected. It's definitely FIFA, I remember. Any other correction on that page 3?
It was also expressed that the involvement of the committee
basically, it was brought to our attention that the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee is dealing with the issue of intellectual property deal, that it should be necessary for this committee to have an inter-committee session with the other committee on this particular issue, because it is of interest to us too. As arts and culture.
Yeah. So why don't you say the committee would like to interact with the committee on trade and industry with regard to the intellectual property bill?
Yeah, that was the intention. Any other on page 3?
The chairperson also informed the committee about books that.
What the chairperson actually did was the chairperson What the chairperson did, we had a letter that day. The chairperson presented an invitation letter to honorable members from the Department of Arts and Culture to the Cultural Diplomacy Conference to be held on the 20th and 21st May. The department also offer to carry the cost of travel and accommodation and all things related to that. That was the position. If you read it, it says the chairman informed the committee of the invitation. To whom? It's an invitation to honorable members. And it was not donated by Aneki Bota Puka. It was the books were donated by Aneki Bota of Puka Publications.
If you can just delete the one that we
haven't. Any other?
If you can delete also, just say that the wire is also from the first part. And this last one, I think it's not the head of the chapter. I think after this, the chairperson thanked members for attending the meeting or whatever, and he did there. But this part that the chairperson ANC members remain, I don't think it's necessary for this.
It's not. And going back to the paragraph just above that. Donated by Aneki Bota of Puka Publishers, then whom he said had visited him in the office is not necessary.
No,
it's not necessary. And then the books were subsequently distributed to honorable members at the meeting. We have agreed that we won't adopt these minutes until we have those parts that the amendments we made, they are not here. If those amendments were here, we would adopt with the new amendments that we made.
Yes.
Yes, we would adopt. The corrections we made today, we would have adopted. The only problem is the previous amendments don't appear in this minute. Therefore, we are postponing. We're not rejecting the minutes. We're postponing our adoption until we get the other correction factors in. Again, these minutes, like the previous one, they leave much, much to be desired. Honorable Mr. Secretary, you will have to work harder on this minute for us to make progress. We move to item 6. Any other business? There being no item on any other business, the meeting is closed. I'll ask members of the ANC to remain behind.